Hello, this is Kylie Cochran and Emma Vandenide interviewing Dr. Rachel Fedek on December 4th at 1:30 p.m. in the Barrett Suite. This interview is part of the Barrett Oral History Project. Our goal is to preserve a record of Barrett's history in honor of her 30th anniversary. Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us and share your experience.
No, thank you.
So we're just going to get started with some introductory questions. So the first question I have for you is, can you describe your personal history with Barrett?
So I guess it begins some time ago, far, far, far in the in the past. I was a student at Barrett, and so I was actually a transfer student into Barrett in my career at ASU. So that's when it began, and then, I mean, it's come around to now where I now have the wonderful opportunity to teach here.
Why did you decide you wanted to work for Barrett?
So to say one decides to work somewhere in academia would be a bit of a stretch because job opportunities are very, very limited. But when I learned of the opportunity to work for Barrett, I was so, so excited. And I mean, one of the reasons I was so excited and thrilled to learn about that opportunity was because of how much I enjoyed my experience at Barrett, and particularly my experience in the human event in Barrett classes, and just knowing that there was there were smaller class sizes, and there was a lot more interaction with students, and the classes were all discussion based, because my previous teaching experience tended to be with really big classes, and I mean that's a different and fun experience in a different way. However, I really wanted to have a chance to kind of develop more relationships, more academic relationships with students. And I think those discussion settings really, really facilitate that rather than kind of being, I mean, when one has literally hundreds of students a semester, the students get kind of lost in the crowd. So it's nice to get to know each and every student individually and kind of watch them grow throughout the year and hopefully throughout their college career as well.
How many years have you been working for Barrett?
I have completed 3 years, and I'm going into my fourth year. So I guess I'm once the semester's over, halfway.
Wow.
Done with my fourth year.
So did any particular undergraduate experience influence how you teach here at Barrett?
Oh, an undergrad experience influencing how I teach. I guess I can't really, in fairness, say anything in my undergrad influenced kind of my teaching. That's certainly come through more of my teaching experience through mm-hmm. my graduate program and other teaching jobs I've had.
Okay. What has changed since you first started working here?
So much, a lot. So, but I mean, some things, the core of Barrett, certainly remains the same. I mean, it's expanded immensely. Mm-hmm. So when I was a student at Barrett, well, Barrett only existed in Tempe. And well, I mean, the downtown campus didn't exist at all, either did Poly. And I mean, there was no residence complex. It was in Irish Hall. I don't even know. I think that might still exist on ASU's campus. I don't know. But so it was a very, very small community. And they're just, and I mean, also, I think given kind of the time and the fact that it was so small, and also I tended to be a student that kind of just like minded my own business and did my work. And so I was not aware of really programming or opportunity engagements. Maybe I wasn't, I disengaged, but I mean that there's so many opportunities now for students to get involved in so many different things. Be it, service or just a fun activity or self-care. There's so many different opportunities, internships. So that's certainly changed quite a lot, the immense growth. But in terms of the education, I think that's really the same, because I still really quite clearly remember what my human event classes were like, and they were fantastic. And so I think the spirit of those classes has remained the same over many, many years from me being a student to now me teaching here. So I think that, that classroom experience is very much the same. And also, and Barrett did at that time still have a strong study abroad program, and I was lucky enough to participate that in, as an undergrad. So I think that certainly continued over the years.
Where did you go?
We went to three cities, and the trip length was longer because, well, just, you know, costs have changed over the years. I think we spent 3 weeks in London, 2 weeks in Edinburgh, and a week in Dublin. I probably have that off somehow, but I want to say it was about 5 or 6 weeks in the UK region of Ireland. So, yeah.
That sounds like it was an awesome experience.
Oh, it was. It was really amazing. It was the perfect integration of, yeah, academics and experiencing the culture, and it was a lot of fun. And I made lifelong friends in that program, even though I usually just kept down and didn't really socialize that much. That program definitely, yeah, expanded my social horizons.
Just to establish a timetable, I know this is like kind of a taboo question, but when were you in Barrett?
Oh, I suppose I can say. Since I was a transfer student, technically I didn't start in Barrett until 2000, 2003.
That was not that long ago.
Kind of a while ago.
So in your past 3 years working for Barrett, have you worked on any past special projects through the Barrett program?
Let's see here. So, I mean, I have been involved with the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy pretty regularly. So I attend their events and volunteer at their events, encourage my students to go to their events, and sometimes participate as a panelist. So that's I'm certainly passionate about the CSRD and the work they do. But I've also more recently started working on establishing an inside-out prison exchange program for Barrett. So there's already a program running currently in criminology and criminal justice, but I wanted to start a Barrett-specific class. So that I'm going to be teaching my first class in the spring with that model. And the program is a program that started in 1997, initially by a professor, Lori Pompa, at Temple University. And the idea behind this program is to bring, quote, inside students, incarcerated persons, and, quote, outside students, traditional college students, into the same classroom. So it's a really unique experience where people from immensely diverse backgrounds can get together and, think about the world's problems. So I think it's a really amazing opportunity for kind of both sets of students to transform themselves and transform the world around them. So I'm really excited to get that class going.
What do you hope Barrett students specifically gain from a program such as this?
This is going to sound very lofty, but I hope it changes their life. I hope it gives them a perspective that they just couldn't have imagined before in learning about, different people's different life experiences, and also exploring the specific kind of topics in the class that we'll be exploring. So the course is Men and Feminism. And so I think when people think of feminism, people think about equality and liberating women. But in this course, I actually want to focus upon how feminism liberates men as well, that men are also oppressed by the patriarchy, and that's the main focus of the course, so really questioning gender norms that are really harmful to men, thinking about what it means to be a man, and usually that means being tough and not being emotional and cutting oneself off from emotion, and that usually means objectifying women as a demonstration of power or being rich and things like that, and how that's actually really, really harmful to men. But also thinking about how feminism could be a solution to that oppression for men as well.
Where did your inspiration for this particular subject matter come from?
I've just had a lot of interest in various social justice issues for a long time? That's a really good question. I have to ponder that for a moment. Everyone has experienced harm in some way or another. And I think thinking about maybe some of my own experiences of harm, and thinking about maybe men in my life that may have demonstrated that, reflecting on this for years, it really seems to me that a large reason that I think men cause harm is due to these really oppressive gender norms that they internalize and then demonstrate. So I've also been passionate about feminism, but I want to liberate men from these oppressive structures, but that also is in turn going to help women. Like if men aren't internalizing these harmful stereotypes, then they're also not going to be harming women then as a result of that. So I think it all kind of works. I think all of it has to be addressed, and we can't just focus on liberating women or liberating men. It's kind of all has to work together.
Have you established a book list for that class yet? Like what materials would you be looking at?
Yes. So, handy dandy syllabus.
I'm just questioning because I know Adichie wrote a really good letter about feminism. I don't know if you've heard it. Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie wrote the book called Dear Ijewele, or 15.
Oh, I'm familiar. Yeah, I've heard of that, but unfortunately, I have not made it to that on my book reading list.
Well, I highly recommend it. But I'm just curious what sources you're consulting for the class.
So we'll certainly be looking at a number of bell hooks works. So we'll be starting with Feminism is for Everybody, and then looking at some selections from her book Communion, and then also reading her book The Will to Change. So those are the central feminist works I'm going to be drawing from. But we'll also be looking at documentaries. So we'll be looking at The Feminist in Cell Block Y, and that's actually a documentary about a prison class that teaches feminism. And it's almost exactly what I want to do in my class, so it works quite nicely with this class. Also, we're going to watch The Mask You Live In, Misrepresentation, to kind of look at some of those issues. What are some of the other... Well, also looking at some articles on the way masculinity can be problematic in kind of different types of ways, depending on ethnicity. So Chicano manhood might be different from Black masculinity, and we'll be examining kind of some of those differences as well. But we'll also be getting into some work on rape culture and how that ties in to the violence, I think, that just comes from these stereotypes, these oppressive stereotypes that men are kind of forced to adopt in society. So, I could go on and on. I don't know how many sources you want, but
no. My next question about this program is: this the first semester that Barrett is partnering with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So this spring will be the first class happening. So.
And is it just going to be a one semester class? You're going to see how it goes.
I suppose that's fair to say. I mean, my hope is certainly to continue this. I would love to do it once a year. Logistically, that might be difficult, but I really hope we could do this class every other year to give Barra students that opportunity.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, moving on to another very important class, the human event. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about your teaching style and your approach to the human event class?
Sure. So, well, I guess I'd first start out maybe commonalities, but I really see the human event as a multicultural historical survey of various humanities, so exploring philosophy, literature, poetry, art, religion, history, and exploring all of these kind of different genres through various texts, but I look, of course, at written texts, but also film, as well as documentaries and music videos that I'll often, and sometimes I often will pair a music video with a text to kind of draw connections with that. So, I think I just totally lost my train of thought. What was the question again?
I was just asking about how you approach the Human Effect course, because it is mm-hmm. such a diverse course, and every teacher has their own take on what the human event should be.
Oh, yes, I'm looking at the wrong one. I really think I approach it more as a facilitator. So I like to, of course, I'm there to guide the discussion and set the parameters and clarify things if there's confusion along the way and make any corrections that may be necessary. But I really see the class as largely led by the students. It's really a student-driven discussion. And in terms of my approach, since my background's in philosophy, I mean, that's the lens in which I kind of see everything through. And also having background within philosophy, studying a lot of feminist philosophy, those are just some of the issues that tend to pop out at me more often than others. So that might be a like slightly different way I might approach the human event than others. I might have more Beyonce videos than other people. I taught a Beyonce class, so.
Sounds like a fun class. So besides your philosophy background and feminist background, what other expertise areas do you say you bring to your human event course?
So I'm also working on actually a couple books right now on love. So I always try to push those questions in the human event, particularly the possible tensions or intersections between love and justice. So I think, and different texts bring that out, I think, in different ways. So thinking about whether love can be just, or whether love requires justice, or maybe love and justice are just two different realms that can't intersect. So those are philosophical questions I'm interested in that I certainly bring to the human event. But also, I think just I often bring, especially in like 272, a lot of social issues about class and race and LGBTQ issues, and so we kind of explore a lot of that kind of social issues.
For the sake of this interview, can you explain 172 and 272, just for historical context?
Oh, okay. So, yeah, 171 starts from, kind of the beginning of time, whenever the professor wants to start, and it ends, I think, in 1600, and then 272 picks up from 1600 through modern times. So that's the really only formal distinction between the two is these dates.
So looking at both of your semesters, do you have a favorite text?
I would have to say, I mean, that's hard, but I thought about this for a while. I think Moonlight might be my favorite text. Of course, that's a film, but that's, I think that might be my favorite text, because it brings together so many of these issues that I care about in one film. And it's just a beautiful, breathtaking film, for one thing. The acting is completely impeccable. And it brings together issues about oppressive conceptions of masculinity. It brings together LGBTQ issues, issues of race and class and oppression and incarceration. It brings together all the important issues in my mind, and it does so in a beautiful way. So I think that would have to be my favorite, and the students certainly get a lot out of it too. It's kind of nice. I talk about a lot of these issues separately, and then the students can also, I think, get a lot out of talking about all these issues brought into one film.
I was also going to ask, what in your experience has been the student's favorite text from your course?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Or a popular one that comes to mind.
Yeah, I can never remember what I assign. I mean, I think For 171, I recently assigned Lieutenant Nunn, and that seemed to be very popular, and this is the first time, yeah, that I've assigned it, and the students really seem to enjoy that text. It's, and the text is about, I'm actually not sure how to talk about Catalina's gender, because Catalina biologically is female, but then lived as a male most of their life, but also sometimes in writing refer to themselves as a woman, but sometimes a man, so I'm not sure how to refer to Catalina. But so the Catalina's story is that, at the time she was in a convent and she hated it there, so she broke out when she was a teenager and lived as a man for pretty much the rest of her life. And this is during the period during colonialism, so she went to the quote New World and participated in all of those horrific acts. But it's just quite a fascinating story that, you know, that someone was able to do that. So the students certainly were, really engaged in that text and the different issues it brought about in terms of gender identity, but also colonialism and violence, and yet bringing about questions, what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be a woman? So that was really popular. I just finished up History of Ideas, and I think a lot of the students liked some selections from a poetry collection, Red Hot Salsa, and that's a collection of Latinx, Chicanx writers, and it really brings together kind of a lot of the poetry focuses on struggles with identity, and when I was that age, I think struggles with identity are pretty common in one's college years. So I kind of like to push that. It's like, think about this more. And in that text collection, the identities are primarily struggles with, you know, one's American identity versus one's Mexican identity or Dominican identity, and how those can be in tension with one another, but also how they can come together and be unified. So those were also some popular texts too.
What's the biggest takeaway that you want your students to walk away from at the end of April?
Oh, I want them to question everything. I don't want them to take anything for face value. I think the most important thing in the human event is coming away with those honed critical thinking skills. That's what I really want them to take away. I mean, it would be nice if they, it's nice if one remembers like something they read, but the critical thinking skills are what everyone needs. I mean, it doesn't matter what path you're going on. Everyone needs those critical thinking skills. So that would be the biggest takeaway I'd hope my students have.
Looking back on when you took the Barrett class, how has it been different teaching it? And would there be anything you would have told yourself as a first-year Barrett student?
Oh, gosh. So I might not be following the question.
Oh,
so
because what, you are you were a transfer student. So I guess what I'm trying to ask is, now that you've been teaching the course and now that you see the other side of the intent of the human event, what would you have told yourself when you were taking that class that maybe would have answered your questions about what the human event is, or how do I approach such a discussion-based class?
I think that idea was pretty clearly presented when I took the human event anyway, so I don't know if I'd really have to tell myself to do that, because I think that was really, really pushed by the professors that I had, that it's really about critical thinking, and so we should be analyzing these texts in a deep and significant way and think about them in different ways and play with ideas, and I think that's what I tried to do anyway in the course. So
now, bringing it back to the present, can you describe kind of a day in your life here at working for Barrett in addition to your outside programs that you're working on?
Yeah, that every day is so different. so it's really hard to say, but let me see here. So, yeah, every day is quite a bit different, but, I mean, of course, like, I may be teaching class one day. Most days I am meeting with students to talk about ideas in the class or to talk about their papers, or I'm meeting with thesis students that I'm working with. I might be attending a CSRD event or a Barrett lecture or something like that. As I talked about the Inside Out program, there's a lot of organization and kind of administrative details to take care of with that. So I'm often working on that, communicating with people. Also, of course, there's grading, there's administrative stuff. And I also work with the travel program, and I'm also participating in one of the travel programs this summer. So that also certainly takes up some time too, which is a lot of fun.
Aren't you going to Australia? Is that true?
Germany and Switzerland.
Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about this program as well?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I am going along with Dr. Fetty, who designed this program, Finding Frankenstein. So it's going to be awesome and amazing. I may be a little biased, but there's so many things I like about this program. Well, for one thing, I mean, Germany and Switzerland are just amazing, but we're going to actually be going to some more of the smaller towns so we can be more immersed in the culture there. Because when you go to a big city, so if you go to a tourist trap, sometimes one may not even really feel like there's somewhere that different than a place in the U.S., but... and also, I mean, as the theme is Finding Frankenstein, we'll be visiting significant places from the novel Frankenstein. Mm. So we'll be going to Frankenstein's castle.
Wow.
We'll be going to the glacier in France, the cave. There's so many places we'll be going. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but it's super exciting. And then the class I'm teaching, it may sound... far off, but in Frankenstein, there's a lot of complex identities. So I'm actually kind of taking that idea and bridging it with Switzerland, which I think has a complex identity, it having at least four, or is it five, languages common in the country. And so my class is focusing on Anne-Marie Schwarzenbach, who is not a well-known figure in the U.S., but has kind of a cult following in Switzerland. And I'm going to be talking about her complex identity in multiple levels. So kind of, I want to say, sort of mirrors Switzerland's complex identity. Also, like, Switzerland being neutral in the war and what in World War II, but what does that really mean? And then Anne-Marie Schwarzenbach, she was kind of growing up, she was a young adult when World War II was breaking out, and her parents were supporting the fascists, and she was strongly opposed to that movement. And she was actually a journalist, a photojournalist, and a writer, and traveled all over the world writing stories and taking pictures. So she certainly had kind of maybe multiple identities in terms of kind of how much she traveled, but also she started dressing as a boy, like a boy, mm-hmm. quote, when she was a young child, and I guess all just kind of always dressed like that throughout her life. So, and she had relationships with both men and women, so she had kind of multiple layers of a complex identity. So that's how I'm kind of tying it in with the Finding Frankenstein. Since Frankenstein, the characters in Frankenstein have a complex identity, this is another kind of branch of that.
So when you're coming up with this course, what is your first step when you're given this opportunity?
I guess it was, I mean, this totally just draws from my own lucky experience. So I only know about Anne-Marie Schwarzenbach because my thesis advisor is her, my dissertation advisor is a relative of hers, but also studies her and is writing a book on her. She's become kind of more popular in the years in Switzerland. So yeah, she's Swiss. So it's just kind of dumb luck, if you will, that like when Dr. Fetty proposed this course and was asking for, you know, courses to be paired along with it, I thought, oh, maybe that could work. And well, it did. So.
Do you have a particular mentor in Barrett or anyone that you've worked with that's really stood out to you?
Oh gosh, there's so many. Goodness, goodness.
Well, you can name a few.
Yeah. So Barrett is, I cannot emphasize enough how incredibly amazing Barrett is in providing mentors to one another when first starting to teach here. Because, to be frank, it's a pretty tough job in terms of, because none of us, we're teaching texts, as I was talking about earlier, from all different disciplines. And we are not, we don't have PhDs, and, you know, we all don't have like six different PhDs. So we need to kind of, and, you know, designing effective discussion questions and things. I think it's a lot to take on as a teaching job. And so, but I think that luckily Barrett understands that. We get so much support from our fellow colleagues. We actually have a mentoring program, so new faculty get paired up and matched up with more experienced faculty. And actually, the faculty members, I guess, just that I work with most, who I was assigned to, were Dr. O'Flaherty and Dr. Scott. So they've been incredibly helpful in helping me kind of figure out how this whole human event thing works and the best ways to navigate it. I mean, but again, like so many people have been so helpful with like little things here and there. So I have to just say like everybody, but I've worked mostly with them.
Now, when you took Barrett, does your Barrett teacher still work for Barrett? Or do you know that?
Yeah. Yes. So, well, actually, the human event, no. They aren't at Barrett anymore. But when I attended study abroad, yeah, two of those professors are still here. Wow. So, yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, pretty fun.
So my next question for you is, what makes Barrett downtown, since you took classes at Tempe, different from your previous experience with Barrett?
Yeah, so Barrett downtown is, yeah, I think really unique, well, for a number of reasons. I mean, well, we're literally embedded in the downtown community. Well, for one thing, it's in an urban environment, which the other campuses are not. And also, we're not, Barrett downtown is not, like, sequestered off. It's not separate from downtown. It's completely, I mean, it's, you just kind of, it looks like another, you know, downtown building. It's just completely integrated into the city. So I really like that feel, feeling integrated in the community and the city. And I think, and it also provides then amazing resources just right outside our doorstep. So having, for instance, like news stations right around the corner for journalism majors, and I mean, all the courthouses are right down here. And now we have the law school down here. And also, so many hospitals are in the area, too, and we have the Mayo Clinic partnership. And then also just having so many museums and theater venues, music venues, restaurants. I mean, it's all so tightly knit and close in here. You can really walk to pretty much all those places from here, which I think is not... things are not quite as accessible. I mean, they're certainly accessible from other campuses, but it's super convenient and embedded, I think, in comparison to the other campuses.
So Barrett has this goal to cultivate global citizenship. How do you explore that in your courses and then integrate that into your life as a teacher?
Mm. Yeah, good question. So, I mean, I really certainly keep that in mind in designing the syllabus, as do I think all the Barrett faculty want to make sure we include voices from all over the world when we're constructing our classes, and not focusing just on kind of the old white Western man, which is kind of the academic canon. So that's certainly, I think, yeah, what I do in my classes. But also, another project I want to work on, so, you know, there's so many projects, of course I'm participating in this study abroad this coming summer, but I'm hoping to design a new study abroad to Mexico City. I still need to look into this. I literally pretty much just had the idea that I want to go to Mexico City. I don't know what that looks like yet, but I'd certainly want to kind of, that's another project I want to work on, to kind of integrate this idea of Barrack global citizenship in the college. And yeah, I don't think we don't have a lot of our trips often do go to European destinations. Of course, we have other destinations too, but I'd like to get a look more into to Mexico. I mean, it's right here. So, well, I mean, Mexico City's a bit further, but I think that would be a great opportunity for students to learn about places that are not so far away, and that we have a pretty close relationship with.
Now, this is a pretty lofty question, but why isn't Barrett important to you?
Oh, God, why is it important? I mean, so many reasons. I mean, I really like how Barrett focuses on the student experience and student success. And so that provides opportunities to work with students on amazing projects, and get the opportunity to watch them grow academically. And I mean, having these amazingly high standards for honors education, I think being in a place where we can really have the freedom to push students to really do the best that they can is fantastic. So, I'm not sure if I quite answered that adequately.
No, I think you did a really great job with that question. So that brings me to my next question, is how do you think your background helps you teach the human event? This is more of an opinion question.
Yeah, I know, but I wrote later on some stuff down. What was it? Prepared me, or
yeah, like how does it make you qualified, and what your background?
Okay. Yeah. So I guess that as of this year, I've been teaching critical thinking and argumentative writing for about 14 years now. So I had been teaching that for about 10 years before starting at Barrett. So and as I was mentioning, I think critical thinking is really what the human event. It is all about, developing those critical thinking skills. That's really what my training is in, specifically in, of course, my background is in philosophy, and so that's certainly a core subject that comes up in the human event. So I think that's certainly helpful in my, being qualified to teach it. And I think... I might be biased as I am a philosophy person, but I think philosophy is particularly useful in the human event in developing those critical thinking skills and argumentative skills, as it is so, I mean, philosophy is really all about arguments. I think there's like a lot of misconceptions about what philosophy is. Like when people ask the question, like, what is your philosophy? I don't really, that doesn't like connect with me, because to me, philosophy isn't just like having a theory about mm-hmm. something. It's really, and people are often thinking about, well, what's your theory about life or something? So that's usually kind of what the question is getting at. But it's not, but those questions often really aren't based on anything. It's like, well, I just think this, but that's not what philosophy is. It's all about having theories based upon rigorous arguments. And since it's all about rigorous arguments, I think that quite well prepared me to teach the human event. I mean, I've even taught logic in the past too, which I mean, we don't, of course, we don't do that in the human event. But that would like really be drilling down like what we're doing. I might argue that we are doing logic in the human event, just not formally, just informally. So I think, yeah, I've been prepared in those ways.
So based on your emphasis on forming strong critical thinkers, what do you think makes a strong critical thinker? How would you define a person that has those qualities?
Oh, gosh. I should write a paper on that. I'd have to think about that a lot. that's tough. Well, I guess as I was mentioning before, I think a strong critical thinker really questions everything and doesn't take anything at face value, looks for evidence for claims, analyzes claims, kind of tries to look at things from different angles in different ways, and tries to, yeah, come up with creative solutions to problems, kind of thinking outside the box. I guess that might be roughly, I'd want to say a lot more about that, but that's all I can think of off the top of my head at the moment.
What has been the feedback you've gotten from past students about Human Evec, or even your current students? Are you able to share some things that...
I know it's a challenging course, especially the essays. I know the students are often challenged there, but in my experience, that more often than not, they succeed. They meet the challenge. So I understand it's stressful, but I think they really grow a lot throughout the human event tremendously in different ways. We did talk about some of this in my last day of class. They liked that sometimes I pair videos with the texts and kind of analyze them together. So they certainly appreciate that. I have it all written down a piece somewhere, but in the other, I'm thinking about like history of ideas. They really appreciated different perspectives put forth in like kind of looking at various different social issues. Thinking about history of ideas, they appreciated that I wasn't trying to like tell them what to think, that I would interject every once in a while, well, what about this idea or what about that idea? But they said, like, and I very much appreciate that because that's my goal. I think I achieved it. So the students said I did this year in that class anyway, that, you know, I was good about letting them kind of figure things out.
So now I'm going to move a little bit into the future. Mm-hmm. So where do you see Barrett going in the next 5 to 10 years and beyond?
Mm-hmm. It's so hard to say, but I mean, I think I see expanding further, into our communities and forming more partnerships with, whether it be businesses or institutions. I think that's been kind of slowly developing for quite some time. As I'm, you know, trying to develop relationships with, various branches of the Department of Corrections for the Inside Out class, that being one example. But I know certainly there's other examples of becoming more embedded in the community. Just even kind of using some of the venues out here for events, things like that. So I guess, yeah, that is such a big question, but I guess I'm going to...
And yourself, where do you see yourself in 5 to 10 years?
Consistently teaching, facilitating an Inside Out class through Barrett, working more with the Center for the Study of Race and Democracy, and developing more partnerships and relationships with the Department of Corrections to maybe find, you know, community solutions together and how we can just improve our overall community. That would be, I guess, my hope for the future.
Is there a personal goal you have as related to your teaching for the next semester or in relation to how you approach your classes that you'd like to share?
I mean, I guess kind of going back to what my students were saying when we were reflecting on class this semester, is really trying to find the perfect balance of interjecting enough but not interjecting too much. That's probably what I think about the most all the time. I think that's just always going to be a goal, and trying to find that that perfect balance between, yeah, letting students develop all their own ideas. But, I mean, but there needs to be some guidance there and just knowing exactly when to intervene and when not to.
Now, do you have any other comments on Barrett that you'd like to say or anything that we haven't covered that you think any other projects that you're working on or... you have anything as well?
Yeah, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. Maybe I would say, like, I feel incredibly lucky to work here. This is such a, like, so amazing. Like, my colleagues are amazing. Like, everyone who works here is amazing. The staff is amazing. Downtown, we all work together so closely. The students are amazing. It's just... I really lucked out in terms of where I get to work. It's a really supportive environment and just really fun too.
I do have one question. Do you have any favorite funny memories or whatever from one of your human event classes from this year? I know in my own human event class, I still remember some funny discussions about realizing that a text was about two lesbian women and none of us knew for, a good half an hour. So, okay. I was just curious, if you have any funny stories like that of, human or, student realizations about anything or just something that you liked seeing in a student.
Gosh. I mean, there's so many, little ones, but I'm trying to think, any standout stuff in class. Gosh, nothing's, jumping... Oh, I get, might not be as good as your story, but there was one story we read where, the ending is kind of ambiguous, that maybe the two lovers, one idea is that the two lovers just, went off to an island and lived happily ever after, and then someone else put forth the theory, maybe they're dead. Maybe the symbolism is actually not literal, and maybe this means they're dead and they went to the afterlife. They didn't go to an island. They're dead. And then also there was the idea in that same story that maybe since the ending is so ambiguous that maybe the whole thing was a dream, and the story isn't actually real. But yeah. So those were some wow moments for students.
Well, I think that finally answers all of my questions.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much for your participation. And then I also wanted to provide this information to you, is that if you have any more thoughts to share later on, please feel free to reach out over email to any one of us or Rachel, who you've been contacting about the project. And if you have any other questions, you can also contact Vice Dean. So.
All right. Sounds good.
We're finished up. Thank you so much for your time and participation.
Of course.
Just for some.